Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. My name is Mark Amato Pinkham and I'll be your host for the show. The Guardians of the Holy Grail has been created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the Holy Grail mysteries and the Knights Templars and the Freemasons and other secret societies that seem to be creeping throughout the internet and within certain academic circles these days. I'm hoping to, what you might say, set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and other secret societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. Our Gnostic Knight Templar organization is both a mystical order, wherein we practice both alchemy and gnosis, as well as a research organization dedicated to finding the truth behind the mysteries of the Knights Templar and the Holy Grail and the secret societies. And you're welcome to visit our website and learn a lot more about us. You'll find us at www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, this show is dedicated to answering my question and your questions. And so if you have any, feel free to give us a call on our toll-free line at 888-815-9756. Now, today's show, we're going to be discussing more about the Knight Templar mysteries and more about the mysteries of Rennes Le Chateau and the holy bloodline of Mary and Jesus. Our guest today is Gloria Amendola, who just returned from South France, I understand, and has some of the latest updates about what's happening down there in terms of the research and the excavations and so forth that are going on to uncover more about the mysteries of Mary and Jesus. Gloria is a French Templar of the OSMTH movement and part of a commandery in Rennes Le Chateau. She's an intuitive, a healer, and the facilitator of shamanic rites. She is an avid researcher and has been interviewed on numerous occasions regarding metaphysics, spirituality, the Holy Grail, Christ consciousness, the Magdalene mysteries, the divine feminine earth energies, the Knights Templar, and 2012. She currently facilitates workshops and conferences on the Magdalene mysteries and has recently completed her first novel, which is called The Tower and the Dream, Awakening to the Ancient Voices. To learn more about Gloria, please visit her website at www.gloriaamendola.com. So, greetings, Gloria, and welcome to the Guardians of Holy Grail.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. So, I understand you've recently returned from Rennes Le Chateau, so I imagine you have some stories to regale us with today.
Yes, I do. Actually, there is a lot of information. I just got back a couple of weeks ago. It was an unexpected trip. I had been there in the spring. I brought a few people to begin to introduce them to the mysteries of Rennes Le Chateau and the earth energies and the Templars and the Magdalene, of course. But this trip was unexpected, and a couple of unexpected things happened there. I'd like to share a few of them with your listeners. I spent time with Henry Lincoln. I mean, most people in this genre know who Henry is, and I had spent time with him in the spring, and then I followed up with it. It just kind of happened naturally, as things always do in Rennes Le Chateau, about this connection with the area to Venus. And I'm sure as a researcher and a writer, and I'm sure you've been there many times, you understand that, but I'm delving deeper into that connection because my second novel will take place in France, and ultimately that's part of the mystery that's in the earth there. So as I drove around with Henry and so forth, he kept showing me the five-pointed star, that area, you know, you go down the hill to La Vaudoux and that whole area and all the different alignments. And he kept talking over and over and over about it and how it was connected to Venus. And I thought, wow, you know, this, I know there's more to it. I can't quite wrap my full self around it yet, but I'm getting closer. So one day we went over to Campagna Sur Aude, the Templar Commandery, you know, not very far from Rennes Le Chateau. And there's a little grotto there with running waters. And so this is something I'd like to share. To the west of the sunrise line that involves Rennes Le Chateau to Arc, this line passes through a church at Campagne Sur Aude, which was once the center of a Templar commandery. And with so many things that are in dispute in that area, that isn't. So we have that area, and there it is, and it's just tiny and nothing to really draw attention to. But Henry takes me over and a few other people to this grotto with running waters, absolutely gorgeous. And I thought, okay, here's the water source again. Because every time I travel around Europe, I find these water sources with Templar commandries from little places near Wales, like Garway Church, to the much bigger places like Chartres, in, you know, outside of Paris and so forth. And so I'm looking at all of this, and I'm remembering reading a bit about the Templars by Rudolf Steiner. And I jump back to the introduction about how, in this particular book that he wrote, about how there's unsullied etheric life forces carried in human hearts, you know, the Templars, the Grail, and how it connects to the transformation of one's ether body, which is related to the etherization of the blood, or what I've dubbed the blood mysteries. And the reason I say that is because the iron content in the grotto near Campagne Sur Aude outside of Rennes Le Chateau is full of iron. It's like the Red Spring in Glastonbury at Charles Well. And we know that magnetism stimulates the human body by influencing the particles of iron contained in the blood. So these are pieces that I'm working on, that I keep seeing over and over again, the microcosm from the human body and the iron and the blood and the mysteries to the macrocosm of what the inner circle, I believe, of the Templars were doing in the earth in all these locations, of which is very intensified in Rennes Le Chateau.
Wow. So this is the kind of work that that Henry is involved in right now?
Well, no, Henry's big thing, and of which I've always loved about his work, his big thing is about the geometry and the land. You know, The Holy Place is one of his favorite books. He's not big on Holy Blood, Holy Grail, although I'm sure it awakened a lot of people. But what he really has a very deep passion for is the geometry in the land, and so do I, and so I have seen that in Templar overlay over and over and over again in Europe, as I'm sure you have too. And that's what he's passionate about. And Henry lives in the area outside of Rennes Le Chateau, so he's there 24/7, and he just goes over his tracks over and over and over again, hoping that someone will pick up his work in as grounded a fashion as possible and move it forward. I mean, he's really, really eager for that. He's approaching 80 years old, and, you know, he knows what he's contributed, and he also enjoys living there. But that, you know, that's just a part of what I was discussing with him, because the telluric current around Rennes Le Chateau is pretty strong, and we know that those are only found at certain specific ground points, and marks since the Ancient of Times. So we know Rennes Le Ben and the area has all these standing stones. Something Henry told me when I was there, he said, you know, in my research, we were in the invisible church in the grotto outside the Magdalen Church, and he had given his spiel to a bunch of people, and they had laughed, and he and I were sitting there talking and just dissecting further points. And he told me that he felt, he didn't have any hard proof of this, that there was once a standing stone where the Tour Magdala now exists in Rennes Le Chateau. And that's something new I had never heard. But I'm very, very interested in the earth energy there. And I know from ancient into medieval times, specific creative energies could be summoned by direct contact with the ground at these sites, which were commonly held to be sacred land. And I think that the Templars are just one level of those who understood what Jackie Quilley calls that meta-science of tapping into the power of the earth.
Well, we over the past few months, we've had different people associated with the Bloodline movie on. Renee Barnett, and we also
I know Renee well.
Lionel Fanthorpe, and so forth, and of course, so people are very interested in any updates you might have regarding that. I understand you've been hanging out with that crowd a little bit down there too.
Yeah, I do know them. Well, one thing I can say that kind of connects to my work, I'll kind of divert from the Bloodline movie at the moment, is that when I was giving Ben Hammett a ride back to his place, because we happened to be in Rennes-le-Château at the same time, and we had met last year when the screening happened in Rennes-le-Château of Bloodline, and I facilitated the Q&A afterwards, because Renee and Bruce at that time couldn't make it to Rennes-le-Château, to France. So Ben and I were just catching up on a few things, and he was aware of my interest in the earth energy in Rennes-le-Château and how magical and potent a place I thought it to be. We had been on a lot of, I'll tell you two things about that with Ben, but we had been on a lot of similar paths. And so Ben said, Gloria, I'll share something with you. And I said, what? He says, do you know there's a cave opening under, in a certain area, that right outside Rennes-le-Château that like literally takes you under the hill of Rennes? And he said, he and his group, you know, they had tried going in there. I don't even know how long or how they even found it. But the long and short of it is, and interests me, is that this cave opening goes in and it winds around and it leads to Rennes. And what they found inside this muddy, cavernous, difficult place to traverse and cross was loads and loads of quartz crystal. And I had never heard that before, and I had never heard anybody talk about that. And I thought, wow, that just is resonating, no pun intended. And he literally took me to the place, and we got out and we walked a bit of a ways, just a remote local road, and lo and behold, there was this old wall, and in the distance I could see the opening to the cave. And so that's just for another trip myself up there to really see, you know, the whole lay of the land and how far I can get into that particular cave.
Was this a cave that may have in the past been used for a ritual and ceremony, or perhaps been frequented by the Templars?
You know, that I don't know, but the interesting thing, as I had initially mentioned Campagna Sur Aude, is that you have that location, you have the grotto with the waters and the iron and that whole aspect running, and not really far from that area is this opening to this cave, which eventually wraps around to Rennes-le-Château. When you're moving in the direction, you're not quite sure how it actually connects, but it does. And so is it, I've never heard of all the trips I've made there and the people that I know. I haven't really heard anyone talk about this yet, so I don't know. It's just a beginning exploration path into, you know, was there ritual going on there? Were they working with the waters, the sacred waters, the iron, the blood mysteries, crystal in the earth to tell your occurrence? Don't know. All the snippets of research that I'm acquiring are leading to that possibility.
Well, what many people want to know, and myself included, is if you have any updates about the mummy that was found in the cavern, which Ben apparently thought may be the mummy of Mary Magdalene. Are there any updates on that?
There's one thing I can share. I mean, there's some things I just cannot share, and I have to respect other people's research and where it's at right now. But there's one thing that I can share that Ben and I have talked about is that he has obviously found these parchments, and they obviously have led him to the Cave of the Magdalene area, you know, south of Rennes, and what was shown in the movie with, you know, the vellum manuscript there, that little piece, and the cup and the jar. Well, one thing that he's maintained, and I didn't know this separately, per the parchments of Saunière, there is a belief that there is still another chest out there.
There's
something else
to find.
Yes. Yes, okay. there are things to find, you know, the greater tomb complex is one thing, but this seems to be a standalone chest supported by some things he's uncovered in the parchments from Saunière. And what's interesting about this and why we were sharing this is because I had told him how, it's a story that I tell, how when I climbed into the ruins of the Denonville family ruins, that wall that exists near La Porte du Rennes, near the garden that Toby and Gerda own, Toby Dobler, who is my Templar commander, we climbed in it one day, and as an intuitive, of course, I use my intuitive psychic abilities, and we were there, and we went in there purposely to kind of draw in the spirit of Marie Denonville. And immediately she came, and in the right-brained, intuitive sense that I had in that moment standing on that earth, she came wiping her apron, and she looked at me, and she says, documents buried outside Rennes-le-Château, and she pointed in a specific direction, and it was intimated that they were genealogies. And I thought, well, this is interesting, and I took that home. And this was before I even knew about the whole bloodline project, so it was completely garnered by the right brain, if you will, the intuitive response. And lo and behold, I've come to find out that Ben says, yes, in fact, that is alluded to in the parchments, and, of course, their team is looking.
Well, so what is the latest on this mummy? Have they done any more research on that? Have they come any closer to actually being able to somehow get it out of this little cavern that it's in?
No, because I think one of the problems that they have, and I'm sure this was covered in Bloodline, is that it's just structurally very unstable. And until they can work with the French government to properly stabilize it and go in a proper excavation, nothing's moving forward yet, and it just seems to be, you know, stuck in that sort of technical place.
I remember in the movie that certainly there was a lot of paranoia going on, and rightfully so, and everyone seemed to be a little bit worried about who was looking over their shoulder. Is those feelings still there in Rennes-le-Château? Are people still pretty worried about what Big Brother might be thinking about their adventures down there right
you
now?
You know, that's a great question, Mark. When the former mayor was still the mayor of Rennes, that paranoia was much more prevalent. And then, of course, he was defeated. But then we all know how Jean-Luc dropped dead that night when he was getting the information from the mayor's office, and, you know, within that time of winning. And that death in the village, in that area, stunned people, shocked people, and scared people because they weren't sure if there was foul play or if it was simply a stroke or a heart attack, and it didn't look good. So it was very tenuous for a while, but I can honestly say from being there that it is shifting. The new mayor and the group that he brings in there, they have good energy. They're moving things forward slowly but surely. Like now the Tour Magdala is lit up at night, and that's just a small thing, but you can really see it from a very far distance away when you're driving. It's really kind of cool to look up there and to see this beacon of light, if you will. Little things. When we did the bloodline screening last year at the little village center that they've built, we had cooperation from everyone in the town who could facilitate the film being shown. There was resistance in general with some of the villagers, but with the people who have the authority now, they're making progress, and I think that's excellent. I think it's excellent for Rennes-le-Château. They want to see things go forward. They're very excited to see things go forward.
You're a Knight Templar in your preceptory at Rennes-le-Château, is that right?
Yes.
Well, that must be an exciting place to have your preceptory located, I would imagine. Are most of the members of your preceptory, are they involved with research projects down there?
Some of them are. I don't know all of the members. It's a larger preceptory. I don't even know how many, but I do know that there's a core group of us that are, including Toby and Gerda Dobler. I don't know if you know them from Rennes-le-Château. They're originally from the Cologne, Germany area, and then they live in Rennes. And they since Jean-Luc's passing, they have taken over the running of the garden on the top in Rennes-le-Château because they do own the property, and they wanted it to move forward after his passing, too. So that's the collective attitude of change that I'm talking about in Rennes. And they are actively involved in a lot of research, and we share information. But right now, I have to be honest, it's a looser effort. I think we're all doing our own thing, and we keep finding ourselves together again and together to discuss and to, you know, put forth idea and move forward. But it just still seems to be lots of pieces and threads to go.
Well, I know that at one point I was interested in becoming a member of Milite Templi Scotia in Scotland, and they resisted my membership because, I was international and I didn't look as though I was going to be able to be present at many of the preceptory meetings. I'm wondering how that's working for you. I don't imagine that it's very easy for you to be a regular participant in your preceptory.
You know, I guess I believe in something. I believe in a force that made this all transpire, come about, that is kind of beyond that or in a different way than that for me at this time. I mean, on one hand, I would love to acquire property in the area and have myself planted there physically, geographically, and more often than I am, but that isn't working out yet. It's in process. So, I mean, that physical aspect of being there is something being worked on for the future. 2011 is my target date. So, for me, I guess it's just to keep exchanging information between the people that I affect and I teach and I work with in the greater New York area, and keep going back and forth and bringing back and bringing people from here to there and creating that bridge and that exchange. That's more of what I see happening right now, and that is the way it's working out. And so maybe that's my purpose at this time.
Well, what we try to do and are trying to do within our organization, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, is to create a balance of male and female within our organization. Do you find that the OSMTH has a similar commitment right now?
I think they're very open to both male and female, and I've met some of the grand priors of other countries. I think the grand prior of Greece is female. There are more females taking up leadership within the order, and I find that exciting that there's becoming more of a blend. I think that can only help in the future, that balancing of energies moving forward and moving down the road. And so I'm very encouraged by that and feel very, very welcome and very supported by a lot of people that I meet in the world stage when I've gone to the meetings, the international meetings.
And so how did you get involved with the Knight Templar? What was your initial attraction to the organization?
Well, in 2000, I decided to write a play about a woman in the Bible. It was the sense that I had. I had written plays before and had some produced. And for some reason, I felt that huge piece was missing. And I did some research. Long and short of it was Mary Magdalene jumped out. And I knew very little really about her. I was raised Catholic and just didn't know much more than, hearing the stories or the myth or the energies of the mother, Mary. So I started to research her, and I think it's impossible to really do thorough research on the Magdalene and not bump up against the Knights Templar. And the minute I did, I was absolutely just drawn in. couldn't just shake the feeling that I had every time their name came up. So I began to do side research on the Templars. Well, this is where it gets interesting. One time I was in Sainte-Marie-d'Almer, outside of Marseille, of course, for the Gypsy Festival. And in my right brain, I hear that these people that I was meeting in the area, Nancy Safford is one, I think you know who she is, and Annie Williams, both from Sedona. And I meet up with them, and I get this message that we're all to convene the next day on the beach on the shores of Sainte-Marie and have a little circle where we sing a song and just, you know, come together. That's all I knew. And everybody was exhausted from traveling, but they agreed to do it. And I thought that was wonderful that they did, because they had really come a long way. I had already had a day or two there, so I was more relaxed. Well, we all meet the next morning, and the way it happens is I end up meeting Toby and Gerda Dobler in that circle. They invite us to Rennes Le Chateau. We were going there anyway. We connected. We connected on a subsequent trip, and I was asked into the order. I remember Gerda Dobler saying to me that she felt I belonged to the Magdalene. And I just casually said, well, if you honor the Magdalene, then I would like to be a part of your order. It seems once I was squired into the order in Alette Le Ben in the ruins there by the Abbey, from that moment on, I felt like I was being downloaded with information constantly, given books to read and places to go, and it's never stopped. It's just been a fast and furious pace, as if some force is trying to show me something. Like, remember this. This is important. This means something. And it feels like the inner circle of the Templars. So I just keep trusting and following and knowing I'm on the right path, although sometimes I don't have a clue as to what is really going on.
Well, so what has been, can you share with us what have been some of the downloads that you've received since you've become a Knight Templar?
Oh, absolutely. I was invested in the order in Rosslyn Chapel in Scotland, and I think you do your investiture there too?
Yes, we have, uh-huh.
Yeah, so I was there and I was kneeling, during my ceremony and investiture and kneeling, and I kept staring at the apprentice pillar. It was just right in my line of sight, what, maybe 40 feet from me, if that, and I just kept staring and staring and staring. And on that day, in my investiture, I think it was right around the fall equinox, I just started to get a download of information, both from Christ and Magdalene. And I consider them my teachers from the higher realms, and I always have for many years. So I just accepted and was present and enjoyed my investiture and the festivities afterwards. Well, it just seemed like after that I kept being shown that there was this inner circle of the Templars, and that there was this ancient knowledge that had always been guarded, always been kept safe for the right time. And that's something that had been said to me in my investiture in the channeling, that I was being told that there was really a time and purpose for everything, and that I had to let go personally of some of the anger of the way I felt Magdalene and women, intuitive women throughout history, were treated, you know, the Inquisition, for one, and that I had to really understand that on a deeper level there was a divine plan to all of this, and I had to begin to let go of personal emotion and anger and really begin to see what I was being shown.
Well, that certainly sounds like a very important experience, Gloria. Thank you for sharing with that.
You're welcome.
Well, we're gonna take a short break and come back for a lot more with Gloria Amendola. So please don't go away. We'll be right back in a moment.
New multipolar inline and portable water system, new from hempusa.org. Now you can restructure and degas your water supply from any source, rendering chemicals harmless to the human body by polarizing the molecular structure. Imagine a softer, smoother water with increased oxygen that helps the nervous system and brain. There are no filters to buy, and it can be taken anywhere, making it our number one new product from hempusa.org. This water system will descale all piping, hot water heaters, and appliances clients is due to heavy buildup of hard minerals. Detoxification may result with restructured water by easily entering the fine capillaries of the human body by dissolving stones and toxins, with extreme positive effects on plants, vegetables, and fruits, improved taste, color, size, and yield with approximately 30% less water usage. There are multiple sizes also available for farms and commercial use. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in The Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed, starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax, as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
Don't miss the book, Corporatism, which has been featured on the Alex Jones Show and which covers everything about the real force of social control called the New World Order. This group exists. It controls all the governments of the world, and it hides within international organizations like the IMF, the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, and others, all of which are not loyal to any one country, but are devoted to controlling and merging all of them through war and economics. Find out how they control the world through false flag terrorism, inflation economics, the business cycle, and through food contamination, war, vaccinations, television, and public education. You can find this book at Amazon.com or at antimatterradio.com.
Well, again, we've been talking with Gloria Amendola, who was a Knight Templar in part of a preceptory in Rennes-le-Château, France. She's also a researcher on Templar and Mary Magdalene mysteries. If you'd like to know more about Gloria, please visit her website at www.gloriaamendola.com. And if you have any questions for her, in the next few minutes, feel free to call our toll-free line at 888-815-9756. For those of you that don't know, we're the International Order of Gnostic Templars, and we exist in order to revive the ancient Gnostic and alchemical rites and teachings of the Knights Templar. And you can join us in our work if you'd like. Please visit our website and see what we have available. It's www.gnostictemplars.org. So, Gloria, back to you. And so it sounds like you have a very strong connection to Mary Magdalene. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I mentioned earlier in the interview that when I decided to write a play about her, my sense was that I was going to write a play about her and I was going to go to New York and have it workshopped and try to get it produced, and then I would move on to another woman, perhaps in the Old Testament, and explore her a bit and maybe write a character study, bring it into modern day in some way that I do, and move along in that way. I had no idea when I started on this path that it would be an initiation into a much deeper mystery for me personally. And looking back now after the last 9 years of this intense study, I'm absolutely shocked at her as a guardian angel, a guiding spirit, a mentor in the spirit world, however you choose to see that, the things that have been shown to me have been absolutely extraordinary. And a lot of times when they're first shown to me, I'm clueless. I don't understand what's being shown to me. But I have found, and I did a gathering, a conference in 2007 in Connecticut where Tom Kenyon and Judy Sion came. And one thing that Tom said about the spirit of Magdalene, of course he works with her as well, he and Judy, is that in her spirit capacity as an ascended master, in my opinion, she is impeccable. And so I have found throughout the years when I have let go, when I have believed in faith of what I'm being shown, I'm being brought on an extraordinary path. At least in my world, it feels extraordinary. Because it's an inner transformation as well. And every time I've turned around, in some way, shape, or form, she has manifested an aspect of herself to say, yes, you're on the right path, but you have to keep going. And that's been going on 9 years now, and it has brought me to extraordinary places and extraordinary things, and that's why I've begun writing the novels, because they're an adventure story of what is out there when we open to these possibilities.
Well, I know that you visited many of her shrines in mm-hmm. southern France. Where would you say that you experienced her presence to be the most tangible?
Oh, that's a good question. Wow. I think in the Provence area there are some amazing places. I do like the St. Baume area there. The grotto. I don't know if I agree with the legends that she spent the last 30 years of her life there, but there's something about the grotto area in the St. Baume Mountains in Provence that I find extremely special. I have found her presence in the Gorge of Gallimousse, outside of Rennes-le-Château. In Rennes-les-Bains, in Rennes-le-Château, there have been so many times where I find her presence in the church as well, meditating, spending some quiet time, which if you know anything about that church is not so easy to find, but if you do stay in the village and you spend hours there, you can do it. And it's a quiet sense. Let me give you a case in point, so not to be so abstract. One time, some friends of mine were going off to Montségur for the day. That was their journey. And I wasn't called to do that, but I was called to be in the area to spend some time around Château Blanchefort. So I went into the church and I just did a quiet meditation, as soon as it opened at the time. And, I heard her voice and she said, go about your day, just, you know, meander along, go about your day, and trust that at the right time, you will just, and I was in my car, that you will just know exactly where to go to meet a particular person you need to meet. And I thought, okay, whatever. So a friend of mine and I went driving through the lands of Arc and by the Poussin tomb and, you know, reading Gen Isis and different books and trying to put pieces together. And lo and behold, we were just off-road, just enjoying a peaceful day, sharing some research threads. All of a sudden, I got this inkling that I needed to start the car and I needed to drive up the road to Rennes-les-Bains. And so I do, but I make this right-hand turn into this little parking lot, which gives you a trail straight up to Château Blanchefort, which is a very important point across from Pêche-Cardou. And I end up meeting these two men in the parking lot who are about to hike up. One of them is in Bloodline, Gerard Tome. He's a local man. And he begins to, through, you know, a translator, he begins to tell me extraordinary things about the area that I have since come to find a deeper research meaning in terms of the tomb, the Temple of Solomon there, the repository, the ways into the tomb complex and so forth. It began in the church in Rennes-le-Château. It began in that temple, in that holy place of energy. And I was guided, and it was an extraordinary journey what this man showed me and has taken me deeper in to the understanding of that tomb complex there, which I and many other people believe is around the Pêche-Cardou area in Rennes-le-Bains. So, you know, that's just one simple little example that I would say of the Magdalene's presence and how instructive it really is when you're willing to really just listen and follow. And that's the kind of experience I've had with her without exception for 9 years, and that's what happens to me repeatedly in Rennes-le-Château. So there is something for me there with her as well.
Well, we have a caller on the line for you, Gloria. Nancy's on the line with a question for you. Hello, Nancy.
Hi.
Would this Hello? Be Nancy yes. Stafford by any chance?
No, it's not Nancy Stafford, but I've sure been on the same trail. I've been in Sedona and lived close by, and I was in Rennes-le-Château with another tour group just 2 weeks ago, started on my birthday, October 12th. And Gloria, thank you so much, because, you know, you speak about how the Magdalene, once that, you know, we connect, then everything starts being so synchronistic. And yes. just catching your program today is a part of it. So I have a question, but I did want to say thank you first, because as I stood in front of that, the statue of the Magdalene in the church there at Rennes-le-Château, it was just the most incredible feeling I've had in this lifetime.
That's very special.
Yeah. So anyway, the question is, I notice on your images from your website that you also have a picture of good old Tintagel, which I visited in 2004. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that greeted me as I landed in France in my little first hotel room was a picture of Arthur across from me. It kept coming up all along the journey in France. And I just wondered, did you have any personal experience about what's going on that you could share, or is this just maybe my own personal journey here?
No. I think there's a valid thread in the Akashic record there that you might be tapping into, that psychic stream of information. In, as I was saying to Mark earlier in the interview, that my first novel is completed and available, and it begins in America. The second novel primarily takes place in France, and the third one takes us to Britain or the UK, because it is very, very important to make the connections between the children of the bloodline, if you believe in that story of the Rex Deus yes. tradition, and the further, and you know, that Mary and Jesus did have children, and you find these imprints and these legends in Britain, very much so, and Tintagel had a very strong Arthur feeling, and of course everyone argues it isn't a place that he was or wasn't, but to me these are some of the connections I've made so far, and I have a lot more research to go. There's this thread between the children of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, whether it was, I believe, their son who went there. There is a connection with Joseph of Arimathea. There is a connection with Arthur and with Merlin and the whole Druid understanding. So to me, yeah. those are all bits and pieces that come together and they merge, you know, the UK, especially Britain and France. And I think it's very important to follow those.
Yes. And, you know, as you mentioned that you're looking into finding land that will actually put you physically back at Rennes-le-Château, this is what it's been entering my dreams, and it's becoming so strong. And, you know, sometimes I discount myself because I'm thinking, well, sure, you had a great time there. You can revisit. But I just want to walk on that land, and I don't want to walk in a hurry.
You know, it's funny that you should say that, because when I was, the first time I went there, I so connected with the earth there more than any other place in the entire world. And I've traveled a fair amount and I've been to wonderful and incredible places. But there was something about the earth there that was so feminine, that felt so good to me, and I knew I could not be away from the land. I absolutely knew it, but I didn't know why. I just knew it. Well, I've come to understand in some of my research that human DNA is based on geometric structure. The human yes. body's energy field is sensitive to the harmonics of the environment on which it stands, right? By considering mm-hmm. the geometry, the temple builders discovered that a specific resonance will exchange between a stone temple and a human temple. And what I'm trying to say is that different people resonate with different temples, because your own internal geometry wants to reconnect you with the place or the energies that bring you back to perfect equilibrium. This is information that I've learned from Freddie Silva in his temple making, but that's what I found in France, and that's why I am so eager to always be there and walk the earth, because I really believe it's balancing or awakening more DNA in me.
Well, and you know, you really nailed it for me personally as well, because I think what it is now's the time, because the Magdalene, Mary Magdalene, will not be in hiding anymore. And so just as you said that, I go, well, yeah, I guess it makes sense, because that's the first time in this lifetime that I felt the physical presence so strongly. And it's just like we're just beginning this. And so thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you, Mark, for having Glory on the program.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for stopping by today, Nancy. Appreciate it.
All righty. Bye-bye.
So, Gloria, we're kind of winding down now. You mentioned offline that you might have a pertinent question for myself. And,
I do.
So if you do, now's the time to ask that.
Okay. In your book, The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom, I was reading some stuff about Jesus the Essene, the Grand Master of the Hebrew Serpents. And let me preface this by saying you had asked about some stuff with Ren Le Chateau, and this is one thing that I just learned this year that perhaps you know about, and maybe your listeners do, but I didn't have a clue. In the Calvaire, in the Invisible Garden at the Grotto of the Church, Mary Magdalene and Ren Le Chateau, in that area where Christ is on the crucifixion, it's a Calvaire. And I was there with Henry Lincoln, and he took me around the inscriptions that were made on the base of the stone that holds the cross. And in the back, it says, Christ, A-O-M-P-S, descendant. And Henry says, what do you think that means? And I said, well, I don't really know. And, of course, Henry knows Latin. And he says, well, one definition is Christ defends his people from all evil. He says, but there's another. And he said, Christ defended, upheld, the ancient and mystical order of the Priory of Zion, A-O-M-P-S. Now, I was stunned by that, but it made sense and it felt right to me. So when I was looking at your book last night, The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom, and reading about Jesus Christ the Essene, the Grand Master of Wisdom, you mention on page 232 that Jesus, you know, as Avatar Sanat Kumar's mission would be to complete the work he had begun at the beginning of the cycle by preparing humankind for the projected end times. End of a cycle, a period when there would be an opportunity for souls to achieve immortality en masse. This he would do by revealing the timeless Venusian path of polarity union through both yoga and love. And I was wondering if you could perhaps explain to me just a little bit of what the timeless Venusian path of polarity union through both yoga and love is, a little bit more about that, Mark?
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Certainly, the Venusian influence over the path of alchemy and gnosis can be traced back many thousands of years, at least back as far as Egypt and some of the ancient civilizations where you find the Ankh prominently displayed, and that the saviors of those civilizations were all associated with Venus. And the legends are that the original sons of God that taught the daughters of men the secrets of alchemy came from Venus, and there was one great master, Sanat Kumara, who led the sons of God, and that he came via Venus. Some say he originated in the Pleiades, but he came via Venus, and this is a great master that you hear about all over in the East as the first guru, the first teacher of alchemy, the world, king of the world. All the secrets of alchemy, the secrets of uniting the male and female polarity together, so many of those secrets are said to have come via these Venusians. And the energy of Venus and the energy of the goddess of Venus has always been that of love and passion. that it's that energy that brings the polarity together, and that's simply what alchemy is all mm-hmm. about. Okay. And in the ancient times, it was the goddess Venus who was considered to be the patroness of alchemy, and the goddess of alchemy, and Mary Magdalene herself had been associated with the goddess Venus. Because it's that same energy of passion that unites the sexes that also brings the polarity together, the male-female polarity, as the alchemical force. And you talked about iron earlier on in, mm-hmm. in the interview, and in the ancient times, the goddess Venus always manifests as a meteorite. The meteorite was used in the ancient mystery schools in order to awaken the kundalini, to unite the male-female polarity and activate the kundalini. It held her energy.
That's fascinating.
So it's always been her. She is the energy that brings the polarity, unites the polarity together. And see, the meteorite is a fiery stone that theoretically falls into the Mediterranean. So fire and water become naturally united, and then what springs from the steam that's created from that is the goddess herself. Venus, she's the goddess of love and war. She is the goddess of the polarity, and her mm-hmm. polarity it manifests as the morning and the evening stars, her two twins. So many of the mysteries of alchemy you can find through studying her legends and mysteries, but also simply by watching the cycles of Venus, the 8 and 13 and the 5, because they're all related to alchemy and different stages of alchemy.
Okay.
So it's all, so much of it, it's all about her and her tradition. She truly is the patron of alchemy. So I don't know if that answers your
question.
No,
it does help. I love the understanding of meteorite and what that brings to the story. I think as I write my second novel this winter and get connected to the levels of Venus in Rennes-le-Château, kind of to come full circle here, I find that on the one hand there's this extraordinary exaltation of the Magdalene energy and Venus and the La Vallée and the Valley of God and that pentacle that Henry works with in the five-pointed star. But then there's another side of it which I'm still working on with Saunier and Marie Denarnau, and if they were using the left-hand path of illumination, as the Templars were said to, you know, using that sexual energy for power, you know, in some darker way. There is a suggestion that they were using the convocation of Venus in the Church of the Magdalene, and I, because I don't follow that path, I don't really know what it is. I haven't found it enough yet. I found some information that was sent to me by the source who's telling me this, that to really look into this whole left-hand path of sex magic, illumination, and the darker side of it. You know, we have, and I think it all came together in Rennes-le-Château in different layers of history. And so I guess we have, you know, talked about Marie Denarnau and Béranger Saunière, but I do know someone connected to and or in the Priory of Sion over in the UK, and they keep pointing me in the direction of Marie Denarnau and who she really was and what were they really doing with these sex magic rites and this use of this ancient form of energy in Rennes-le-Château.
Well, what we're all doing, all our work is dovetailing now, and as you might be aware, that we're having an international conference next April to bring together the various secret societies, bring them back together again. The goal is to make it clear that what we've always been about is the Gnostic alchemical path, this Venusian path that we've been mm-hmm. we've been talking about, and that it's time to bring it back into consciousness again, that we've been the guardians of it, and now's the time that we can actually spread it around the world.
Okay.
And certainly you are invited to come to that. That's April 17th next year in Italy, and we already have a number of formidable grand priors that have agreed to come from around Europe. And you're certainly welcome to come to that. But our goal is to take religion back to its roots, its spiritual roots, as the Gnostic alchemical path, which, you know, which is all about the Venusian tradition that we talked about, and what's always been united us together as a one's in solidarity around Europe is the sign of the rose. The rose is the Venusian sign, and it's also the sign of alchemy.
Okay.
And we were at one point known as the Knights of the Rose Cross.
Mm-hmm.
The rose, the deep red color of the rose represents the fire of transformation, and the opening represents the opening to Gnosis. And so right now we have the planetary alignments for world enlightenment that we are trying to bring together all the various factions of the secret societies, and our symbol is the rose. So it's
great.
All
interconnected.
It's
efforts.
All interconnected.
That's excellent,
yeah.
Really.
So we have that going on next year. Also, in regards to the Rennes Le Chateau, Nancy Safford and myself will be leading a tour over there.
Nice. Okay, I just saw Nancy over at Rennes Le Chateau.
Yeah, you can find out more about that at sacredsitesjourneys.com, and we're going to be going to Rennes Le Chateau and many of the sites associated with the Black Madonna and the goddess in southern France and in Spain during that tour. And, of course, you're all invited to come to that. And maybe today we'll have inspired you to join up for that tour. But it's been a real pleasure having you on today, Gloria.
Thank you for having me.
It sounds like you're doing some excellent research, and sounds like we're all on the same page. No surprise there.
No.
And I'm hoping maybe sometime in the future we can have you on again and get another update as to what you're doing.
Great. I would love to come back on.
Oh, that would be super. All right. Well, until then, next week we have Tao Malachi coming on. He's a rather well-known Gnostic writer and teacher who's in a special Gnostic lineage. And so he's going to come on, and we're going to be talking a lot about the Gnostic path and the Gnostic tradition. So you're not going to want to miss that. So until then, have a wonderful week, and always remember that the Holy Grail exists right inside of you. Bye for now.